ID, the future. A podcast about evolution and intelligent design.
Welcome back to another episode. This is Jay Richards, Senior Fellow at Discovery Institute, and I'm excited to be joined today by Eric Holloway. Eric is a frequent contributor, actually, over at the Mind Matters website at mindmatters.ai. He's also a Senior Fellow at the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence here at the Discovery Institute, and he's got a great piece that integrates business and Darwinian evolution that I want to talk about today. But let me just tell you a little bit about Eric first. Eric's got a PhD in electrical and computer engineering from Baylor University. He's currently a captain in the United States Air Force, and he served in both the United States and in Afghanistan in the Air Force. He's the co-editor of the book Naturalism and Its Alternatives in Scientific Methodologies. And as already mentioned, he's a fellow of the Bradley Center here at the Discovery Institute. And Eric, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thank you, Jay, for having me on the show. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to talk to you about this really interesting piece that you wrote at Mind Matters here a couple of weeks ago now called Can Darwinian Theory Explain the Rise and Fall of Businesses? And so any listeners that might be familiar with my own work know I actually find this subject really interesting. In fact, my book, Money, Greed, and God, actually has a postscript dealing with Hayek's sort of Darwinian argument against purpose in the market. And so this really attracted my attention when I first saw it. And so I really wanted listeners at ID the Future to know a little bit about it. So let's back up, though, and give some context. And so first, what the heck does Darwinian theory have to do with business and entrepreneurship? I mean, maybe let's even go all the way back. So what is Darwinian theory exactly? And then why would anyone think it has anything to do with business and entrepreneurship?
All right. So to begin at the beginning, Darwinian theory is the idea that we have all the great variety of different biological species generated just through a process of random variation and natural selection, starting from one or a few original species. So basically, there's no guiding purpose or design or anything like that that causes the species to come about, even though we have such a huge variety of species. And so there are many other areas of the world where we have lots of variety, and we're not quite sure where it all comes from. And one area is business. Mm-hmm. So there are many different kinds of business organizations and structures and ideas and so on. And so people who research organizational structure, they have lots of different theories where that comes from. One is adaptation. They think businesses just adapt to their situation to thrive. But this other view, organizational ecology, they claim that there is not really adaptation going on. Businesses don't really learn and change and try to influence things. Their view is very much like the Darwinian view, mm-hmm. that businesses just kind of randomly change a little bit, and then the environment naturally selects the fitter businesses and eliminates the less fit businesses.
Okay, now that's crucial, because when I talk about these things, people often say, I mean, there's a trivial kind of Darwinian sense where you just think, oh, well, survival of the fittest. Of course, the better business in a competitive market is going to survive, and the one that isn't competitive is not going to survive that.
Right.
I mean, that's really, really trivial. And of course, nobody denies that. And in fact, what's funny is, if you know anything about Darwinian theory, is that Darwin himself was actually, you know, scholars think he was drawing on economic theory in some ways.
Right.
And yes. So if there's a dependency, it actually kind of goes the other way in the history of ideas. But Darwinism obviously is more than survival of the fittest, which is just a truism if you define fittest as that that's most likely to survive. And so, there's actually this area, right? You talk about that in the book. It's called organizational ecology, that really tries to think of business and business success in these purely Darwinian and non-teleological terms. I mean, I think that's absolutely crucial, right? Is that they're selected not because they're better or smarter, but it just kind of a function. Businesses end up being a function of the environment or something.
Right.
Like that.
Yeah, exactly. There's a quote, and I can't quite find it in the paper exactly, but essentially what they say, that any rationality there is in the structure of businesses is entirely from the environment. And then there's another quote where they say, major features of organizations do not arise through learning or adaptation. So yeah, they're basically saying the environment does it all. It's all natural selection.
Okay, so this is weird, because of course an environment that selects, of course, we're already in weird language. I mean, environments don't choose things and select things, but let's grant the Darwinists that, or we never get started, right? But they have to have something to select from. And so where do then different forms of business fit or otherwise? I mean, where do they think they come from? How does organizational psychology, the question of where businesses come from? Is it that those just is kind of random as well?
Yeah, that's what they seem to think from reading through their stuff. They don't think there is even much direction to the original formation of business. It's just kind of a random mishmash of politics and stuff, and something pops out of all that, and then it gets selected.
Wow. I mean, yeah, because this is, I don't think people quite realize when they hear this, because I mean, you know, I use Darwinian metaphors in talking about business. The financial historian Neil Ferguson talks about Cambrian explosions, right? It makes sense. It's easy to do that kind of metaphorically. And for people not to realize just how profoundly, really reductive this is.
Essentially,
people don't, you know, President Obama maybe told business people you didn't start this, but at least he thought people kind of, somebody started businesses. But in this case, people are just sort of function, right? We're just sort of functions responding to things.
Right.
And it's all the way back even to the formation of business, not just the success of business. I think that's...
No one really starts businesses. They just happen.
Yeah, they just sort of happen as a function of the environment. And of course, you know, I suppose the strict Darwinian would love this, because it really is where the Darwinist said there's no purpose or teleology in the natural world. I guess the organizational ecologist says there's no purpose or teleology in the business world or in the market either, is there? There's just... Yeah, there are these functions and there are these entities that pop up randomly, not in the sense for no reason, but at least not purposefully.
Right.
And then they're selected because of some structure of the market that is, again, non-purposive. But, you know, I mean, it's quite obvious. I'm pushing this point, but it's obvious that we're missing the richness of entrepreneurial creativity, of aspiration, of people's ideas that they risk their money and their livelihoods to pursue. And you cite Peter Thiel and his really terrific book. Mm-hmm. I love this book, Zero to One, based on Thiel's actually a lecture he gave at Stanford, and one of his students took notes. And so it's called Zero to One, Notes on Startups or How to Build the Future. So talk a little bit about, I mean, what's Thiel's argument in that book and how's that relevant?
Yeah, Thiel's argument is pretty much the antithesis of organizational ecology. He does recognize there's this view where it's just all a crapshoot and you just throw money at a bunch of businesses and hopefully somebody survives. I guess that's how other venture capitalists approach things. But he says, no, that actually doesn't work very well at all. What really works is when you take a carefully thought through planned approach to investment. And also he doesn't think that you want to just have like a bunch of businesses competing against each other. He actually is in favor of monopolies. So he thinks the really successful business is one that is the first to come up with some radical new idea and then just completely captures the market, which is all very intelligent, top-down type of approach to market and business.
It is. And I mean, that's the metaphor of zero to one. He said, of course, most people in a market, you take it from one to N. In other words, you take a pre-existing idea and maybe you improve it in some way and that's beneficial. But then every so often, somebody goes from zero, sort of from nothing to something, from zero to one. They create something new, which is obviously, you know, I mean, it's radically non-reductive. It puts the human person and his or her creativity at the center of economic enterprise. It really is the absolute opposite. And his point about monopoly is often misunderstood. His point is really, said, look, every business person kind of hopes to have a monopoly in the sense that he hopes that he is able to produce a good or service that's just so good, everybody wants it. Not that he's anti-competitive and, tortures and, you know, defrauds all of the other people. It's just that they're a monopoly because they serve customers so well that everybody wants their thing. That's his point. And that only makes sense if you think human beings might create things that weren't there before, so
that they
could provide something.
Yeah, we're not just grabbing value from other people and kind of do a mutual stealing. People are actually creating something brand new that other people want.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And so, and you sort of get to that at the end of your piece, Can Darwinian Theory Explain the Rise and Fall of Business? And we're talking about this particular movement in management and business theory called organizational ecology. But near the end of your article, you turn the tables and you basically say, look, if Darwinism turns out to be such a poor way of understanding business creativity, which it does. If you really just study the nature of business, I teach at a business school, and I can tell you this is really a terrible way of trying to explain what actually happens in businesses. But then you say, maybe we should look elsewhere for understanding bursts of creativity and progress in nature as well. Right. And then you drop a couple of names likely familiar, obviously, to ID the Future listeners. So tell us about that a bit.
Yeah. So, this is exactly parallels the whole discussion in biological history. We have the Darwinists on one hand saying all the variety comes just through randomness and natural selection, survival of the fittest. But then we have other theorists who claim that the variety actually comes through intentional design of some kind. So we have people like Michael Behe, who identifies certain aspects of biological organisms that seem actually logically impossible to just emerge, like irreducible complexity. Then we have design theorists like William Dembski and Stephen Meyer, who claim there's actually a fundamental mathematical law that prevents something like Darwinism from even working. So Darwinism is just logically impossible. They call it the conservation of information.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this idea that this sort of question of where fundamentally new types of information, not the information that can be transmitted and stored and maybe modified laterally, but the new stuff, the genuinely new stuff. What's great about this is that in some ways it shows that these fundamental, you know, I'll just say these kind of basic background worldview assumptions have these huge implications.
Right.
And it's really the same thing. I mean, you think, what on earth could biology have to do with business theory, right? Those are always different schools, obviously, if you're at a university. And yet, guess what? If you're a materialist, it's not just that there is no God. It's not just that there's no purpose in nature. There are no persons.
Yeah.
You're not a person. That itself is an illusion. And if there can be no persons, well, I guess there can't be entrepreneurs. There can't be great captains of industry that create new things. I mean, this sounds crazy to most people. They think surely Darwinian materialism isn't that radical. And so in some ways, I feel like, you know, movements like the organizational ecology subfield in business and this Harvard University Press book that you talk about in your article, it's good as a sort of a case study that, no, we're not just making this stuff up as a reduction to the absurd of materialism. This is what materialism applied to business would actually lead you to say. Namely, it's sort of business without businessmen in some ways.
Yeah. And that's also, it's the whole reason the Mind Matters exists too. It's exactly the same problem applied to computer science and artificial intelligence. Like, intelligence is supposed to be the thing that creates all new information. And with artificial intelligence, you're just reducing that fundamental mechanism to material causes, which cannot create information.
Yeah, I mean, what's great about this, because very often we think, okay, we're in a debate, say, between intelligent design and materialism, we sort of think, okay, well, there's one way to sort of have this debate, and that's just to kind of line up the different types of evidences. If you're in nature, let's talk about the origin of the universe and fine-tuning and origin of life, in which you're kind of tallying up the different types of evidence. But another way to think about this is that, okay, let's use these frameworks as heuristics. Think about all the things that you already kind of take for granted in the world, and then say, okay, which one of these makes more sense? One in which persons and agents are real and leave the detectable activities of their actions behind, or one in which there are no persons and there is no purpose or agency anywhere, and kind of see where it leads you. And that's what I love about your paper, is that shows how this kind of fashionable field of organizational ecology says, oh, organizations are just like animals. They're just functions of their environment, and all that stuff that looks purposeful and intentional, it's all just an illusion. And I think a lot of people that think they buy that in biology, if they're in business, are never, they're going to see how very, at least how counterintuitive that is, don't you think?
Yeah. And this has actually already been tested out in the big scale with communism. This is actually the way communists fundamentally thought about things. They didn't really think there's truly innovation or creativity going on. And if you read like Marx's work, he actually thinks the culmination of communism is essentially a giant computer that runs everything.
That's right. But I mean, this is, he sort of imagined managers and entrepreneurs as, they're not really value creators. All the value came from, in his view, the labor theory of value, but it's kind of the physical stuff, just the physical movement of machines and arms. That was where all value came from, because that's the only thing you can see. You can't see innovation and new ways of organizing people and teams. That seems weird and metaphysical, but I can tell you what we need is in business theory is a view that makes space for actual human beings.
Right.
to state what ought to be obvious. Well, Eric, this is great stuff. I really enjoy this conversation in this piece. I recommend anyone who hasn't read it, check out Eric's piece at mindmatters.ai and the other things over there at the website where you'll often find Eric and Bob Marks and lots of other people writing about these subjects. Thanks so much for joining us. This is Jay Richards, and we'll talk to you next time.
Visit us at idthefuture.com and intelligentdesign.org. This program is copyright Discovery Institute and recorded by Center for Science and Culture.